Hello and welcome to Decatur Herald in Review. This is Naomi Jacobson and I'm bringing to you the Friday, January 5th edition. Did I say welcome to Radio Reader? anyway, welcome to Radio Reader, and I'm going to read the Friday, February 5th edition of the Decatur Herald in Review. And I'm going to start with a story about a local ordinance that is lacking. Without local ordinance, home bakers left with crumbs. The local cake scene may be the most delicious black market imaginable. At least that is the concern of Sue Clark and others as residential bakers who hope to make a little extra money through their tasty goods are unable to sell their wares under local health codes. I would say, congratulations to our local officials. You've created a black market for cakes, said Clark, owner of the Cake Lady Supply Store in Decatur. Under current state law, known as the Cottage Food Law, home bakers are allowed to sell up to $36,000 worth of certain products at farmers markets, but the law prevents them from selling their wares at any other functions. State lawmakers passed an amended version in 2014 known as the Home Kitchen Act, or Cupcake Law, that would allow the use of non-certified kitchen equipment in the home preparation of baked goods. Home bakers could make and sell up to $1,000 of goods a month and could be sold to a number of functions such as weddings or birthday parties. After this law passed, Clark said several home bakeries began to operate in the open with a focus on multi-tiered cakes for special events. One such baker was Patrick Stout, who operates Decatur Ideal Cakes from his residence on the northwest side of Decatur. Though his workplace looks like a simple residential kitchen, it was here that Stout said he was able to make just over a dozen specialty cakes a year for commercial sale. It's just a passion of mine, and I love to do it, he said. But that oven has gone out quite quiet on the cake front since November, when Stout received a letter from the Macon County Health Department. The letter sought information on his non-existent permit and license, which essentially shut down his operation. It turned out that the cupcake law only goes into effect with approval of a local governing body. No governing body in Macon County has approved it, and officials at the Macon County Health Department are not keen to see it happen. If the ordinance were to be approved, Department Administrator Diana Hayer said she worries about the guidelines for inspection, as the law only states a health department can inspect a home in the event of a complaint or disease outbreak. There is just no monitoring and no assurance to make sure that food is handled properly. Hayer said, our job is to protect the public health, and I can tell you that I think this law does not enable us to do that. In addition to the uncertain authority for inspections, the health department's staff is already stretched thin, as it has lost some state funds due to the continued budget impasse. If a new ordinance were to be set up for more inspections of home kitchens, Hayer said she is unsure her department would be able to handle the additional workload. Other issues, which would include potential rezoning of a residential bakery or how to collect sales tax on transactions, Hayer said. A study conducted by the department showed only 8 other counties have adopted the policy, said Kathy Wade, Director of Environmental Health at the Macon County Health Department. The informal study showed 52 Illinois counties have not adopted any ordinance, while 18 counties did not respond. Wade said the department had sent out 3 letters to home bakers to inquire if they were permitted and licensed to operate such a business, with about a dozen letters having been sent in the past year and a half. She said the department only sends the letters if they receive an inquiry from the public on whether a business is registered in their food license database. If bakers do want to continue to make their goods, Wade recommended, residential bakers become licensed bakers. which would include fees, permits, and a minimum of two inspections a year of the kitchen from the health department to make sure they are up to code. To become a licensed baker, though, would require construction of a commercial kitchen, and Wade said the health department can help assist those home bakers with that. The problem for those like Stout, however, is a commercial kitchen upgrade could cost them thousands of dollars and be a logistical nightmare in some residences. With a full-time job already, Stout said the baking business was a chance to make some additional income and get a bit closer to his goal to operate his own bakery. He said he would have no problem with paying fees, being licensed, and required to have occasional health department checks on his kitchen if a local ordinance allowed it. A change in the ordinance is not as simple as rewriting a few words, though, Tim Dudley said. As chairman of the Macon County Environmental, Education, Health, and Welfare Committee, Dudley said they have begun early discussions on whether to implement the cupcake law or update an ordinance to allow some kitchens to sell their goods. The hope is to have public discussion of these plans by the February committee meeting. Any discussion or change would require some input from the health department, as Dudley and potential changes would need to be feasible and prevent legal liability. "We don't like to close our mind to anything on the county board," Dudley said. "It is a very small business venture, and we would like to encourage that, and that's why we want to look into it further." That push to help local businesses is what supporters of residential bakers focus on. They said that many people must search outside of Macon County to find their wedding cakes. That search for cakes outside the area was a theme repeated several times from visitors at the Decatur Wedding Expo earlier this month at the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel. Darius White and his fiancée, Zuri Thurman, said one of the main reasons to come to the weekend event was to find a cake for their summer wedding in Decatur. White, a Decatur native who lives in Champaign, said he hoped to find something local to cut down on any travel or logistic problems, but that search was coming up empty. "We originally wanted to do something locally without travel for the cake, but we are not having the best options for those," he said. Thurman expressed similar disappointment. "This whole city, and we cannot find one cake maker here. It's crazy," she said. "Any change cannot come soon enough for Clark, as the personal bakers were among her top customers." With the loss of personal bakers, Clark said she has lost about one-fourth of her business in the past year. If no changes are made soon, she said she was not sure how much longer she would stay open. "These cupcake decorators are my customer base," Clark said. "When they go away, I have no reason to keep this store open." From the politics section, the Democratic presidential race is down to just two, Clinton-Sanders face-off. Durham, New Hampshire. Fireworks flying in their first one-on-one debate. Hillary Clinton accused Bernie Sanders on Thursday of subjecting her to an artful smear, while Sanders suggested the former Secretary of State was a captive of the political establishment. It was more markedly contentious tone than the two candidates set when they last debated before the presidential voting began in Iowa, and it signaled how the race has tightened 5 days ahead of the first-in-the-nation primary next Tuesday. The two argued over ideas, over tactics, and over who has the liberal credentials to deliver on an agenda of better access to health care, more affordable college, and more. It was Clinton who went on the offensive, saying he could never achieve his proposals. Then she took after the Vermont senator for his efforts to cast her as beholden to Wall Street interests because of the campaign donations and speaking fees she's accepted from the financial sector. "It's time to end the very artful smear that you and your campaign have been carrying out," she said. Sanders, for his part, suggested her loyalties were colored by a reliance on big corporate donors. "Secretary Clinton does represent the establishment," he said. "I represent, I hope, ordinary Americans." Clinton may say the right things, he suggested, But one of the things we should do is not only talk the talk, but walk the walk. On policy matters, Clinton called Sanders' proposals just not achievable, while Sanders countered that Clinton was willing to settle for less than Americans deserve. I do not accept the belief that the United States of America can't do that, Sanders said of his plan for universal health care, and as of his efforts to take on the rip-offs of the pharmaceutical industry. Clinton insisted they both wanted the same thing. The disagreement is where we start from and where do we end up. The race for the Democratic nomination, once seen as a sure thing for Clinton, intensified this week after Sanders held the former Secretary of State to a whisper-thin margin of victory in Iowa's lead-off caucuses. The tone of their back and forth has become increasingly sharp, and the candidates agreed to add four more debates to their primary season schedule, including Thursday's face-off in Durham. The debate is the last before Tuesday's first-in-the-nation New Hampshire primary, and Sanders holds a big lead in polls in the state. In fresh evidence of the tightening race, Clinton reported that her campaign had raised $15 million in January, $5 million less than Sanders, and the first time she's been outraised by her opponent. Her finance director called the numbers a very loud wake-up call in a fundraising email to supporters. Heading into the debate, Sanders was eager to lower expectations for his finish in New Hampshire, casting himself as an underdog against the most powerful political organization in the country. Clinton, for her part, signaled her determination to at least narrow the gap between Tuesday's vote in the state, where she defeated Barack Obama in 2008, before ultimately losing the nomination to him. Her prospects are much stronger in primaries and caucuses after New Hampshire, as the race moves on to states with more diverse electorates that are to her advantage. The two campaigns have skirmished this week over why Sanders is doing so well in New Hampshire polls. His campaign accused Clinton's of insulting New Hampshire voters by suggesting they only support the Vermont senator because he's from a neighboring state. That was after Clinton's campaign manager referred to New Hampshire as Sanders' backyard. Clinton's campaign also criticized Sanders' camp for what it said were misleading ads that suggest the senator received the endorsement of two newspapers that have not backed his bid for the White House. Sanders counted that the ads didn't say he'd been endorsed, but merely passed along nice words the newspapers had written about him. The Durham debate will be the first face-off for Clinton and Sanders since former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley dropped out of the race after a poor showing in Iowa. Clinton's razor-thin win in Iowa was the latest twist in the election campaign that, until recently, had been dominated by the crowded and cacophonous field of Republicans who spread out across New Hampshire this week. Donald Trump, who finished second in Iowa, stepped up the pace of his campaign and acknowledged he should have had a stronger ground operation in Iowa. Jeb Bush, his campaign lagging, brought in his mom, former First Lady Barbara Bush, who praised him as decent and honest and everything we need in a president. And now a local story from Decatur. Decatur police chief is terminated. Brad Sweeney, who began his stint as chief of the Decatur Police Department early last year, was relieved of his duties Thursday. City manager Tim Gleason announced his decision in a news release. Gleason said he would not have any additional comments, but it was a personnel matter. Deputy Police Chief James Getz, who has been serving as head of the patrol division, was appointed as interim chief. Getz recently served as acting chief for about 12 weeks, as Sweeney received training at the FBI National Academy, and then took 2 weeks vacation to catch up with his family. Sweeney returned to work January 4th. He completed his prestigious FBI session in December. Sweeney, 43, was sworn in as police chief January 3rd, 2015, replacing Todd Walker, who retired a few months earlier. Sweeney was selected by then-city manager Ryan McCrady. Sweeney, a Decatur native, recently told a group of grade school children that he first met a police officer when he was about 9 years old, and that's when he made up his mind that he wanted to become an officer. He spent his entire law enforcement career with the Decatur Police Department after he was hired in May 1995. Sweeney moved steadily up the promotions ladder after serving 11 years as a patrol officer, working on all three shifts. He was a member of the emergency response team and coordinator of the bike patrol unit. The department has about 160 officers. During his career, Sweeney served as a master patrol officer, patrol sergeant, and lieutenant with the Professional Standards Bureau. He earned academic degrees from Richland Community College and the University of Illinois, Springfield. Sweeney, a popular chief with others and officers and community members, opened new avenues of communication while strengthening others. As a patrol officer, Sweeney noticed that six-day work weeks took a toll on the officers' health and family relationships. Officers were grateful when he took action to make their work weeks a little less burdensome. In May, he shortened the work weeks to 5 days, while lengthening shifts to 8.5 hours. We immediately saw a reduction in overtime, a reduction in people calling in sick, especially on that sixth day, Sweeney said in a Herald and Review interview last year. This was a huge morale boost for the police department. In the wake of incidents involving police such as Ferguson, Missouri, Sweeney formed a response team with the Decatur branch of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People to try to prevent violence and foster understanding. Sweeney implemented Coffee with a Cop events to meet face-to-face with constituents. He attended many of the gatherings himself. He instituted department-wide email addresses and strengthened the department's online presence on Facebook, Twitter, and a new website, dpdconnect.com. He recently bolstered the department's K-9 unit to 4 teams, 1 K-9 team for each patrol shift, as well as 1 assigned to the street crimes unit. Sweeney was not immediately available for comment. A story on government and politics. Matic announces education funding hearings. From Springfield, Illinois, House Speaker Michael Madigan has announced another round of public hearings on the state's education funding formula, which critics say currently leaves districts with higher poverty rates and lower property values at a disadvantage. A bipartisan education funding task force, which began meeting last year, will hold its first hearing of the spring legislative session February 16th in Springfield, the Chicago Democrat announced Thursday. Overhauling the way the state funds public schools has been a priority of Senate Democrats, led by Senate President John Cullerton of Chicago. Republican Governor Bruce Rauner gave a nod to the idea last week in the State of the State address. Madigan's announcement also comes at a time when the financial troubles of Chicago public schools have created another point of tension between Rauner and Democrats amid the state's budget impasse. Senate President Cullerton has shown strong leadership on the issue of fair and equitable education funding, which is so important to every community across our state, Madigan said. The president's commitment to fairly funding our schools and helping all students meet their full potential is one that I share, and I plan to work with him to achieve this goal while making sure that voices from across our state are heard and that all schools and programs are protected throughout this process. A series of hearings will be held throughout the spring to develop a legislative plan, the speaker said. House Majority Leader Barbara Flynn Curry, a fellow Chicago Democrat, is leading the task force. Senator Andy Menard of Bunker Hill, the Senate Democrat's point man on education funding, has been working for the past 3 years on an overhaul of the school aid formula. He introduced a bill last year that would funnel more money to poorer districts and seeks to address some concerns with an earlier version. Madigan spokesman Steve Brown said the speaker hasn't taken a position on Menard's proposal. Part of the purpose of this task force is to develop that position for House speakers, Brown said. The panel also will examine a proposal from the Illinois State Board of Education to shift $300 million in special education funds into general state aid for schools, he said. State Representative John Bradley, a Marion Democrat who's on the task force, said the deliberate, thoughtful approach the House is taking is appropriate given the gravity of the issue. Bradley says he wants kids across Illinois, including two of his own in the Marion School District, to have similar opportunities. The children in my area are worth as much as the children throughout the rest of the state, he said. But State Representative Robert Pritchard of Hinckley, the Republican spokesman on the task force, said there have been enough hearings already. It's time to sit down and start analyzing what the recommendations are and determining what can make movement with, Pritchard said. Any move to give more money to poorer districts should come at the expense of others, he said. Any move to give more money to poorer districts shouldn't come at the expense of others, he said. You've got to put new money into it so that you don't have losers and focus that new money on those students that aren't being served, Pritchard said. And this story is continuing with government and politics. The state controller continues to sound budget alarm. Comptroller Leslie Munger is touring the state to sound the alarm about long-term damage the ongoing budget impasse is having on the people of Illinois. Repeating a message she delivered earlier this week in Chicago, Republican Munger told reporters Thursday at the Capitol that the state is on pace to dig itself $6.2 billion deeper into debt by the time the fiscal year ends June 30th. That's the result of $5 billion in lost revenue due to the partial rollback of a 2011 state income tax increase and a $1.2 billion of additional spending in the Department of Human Services and the Department of Health Care and Family Services due to court orders and dissent decrees. By spending more as we bring in billions less, we are making it even more difficult to create a pathway for fiscal sanity, which will allow the state to regain its financial footing and keep our promises over the long term to fund education, social services, public safety, and infrastructure, Munger said. So what is the answer? Clearly, Illinois must pass a budget, a balanced budget, and regain controls over our spending and revenue. Illinois has been operating without a budget since the current fiscal year began July 1st. As a result, major cuts have been announced in recent weeks at Lutheran Social Services, Eastern Illinois University, and elsewhere. Republican Governor Bruce Rauner vetoed all but the elementary and secondary education portion of the budget the legislature approved, saying it was about $4 billion out of balance. Rauner has insisted on winning legislative support for elements of his pro-business, anti-union turnaround agenda before he will agree to tax increases Democrats are seeking to plug the budget hole. Democrats, who have said spending cuts also are needed to balance the budget, say the first-term governor is responsible for the deadlock because he has tied the budget to unrelated issues such as term limits for lawmakers and changes to collective bargaining rights for local government workers. Munger said it's time the two sides to stop pointing fingers and find common ground. What I would suggest to all parties is that they get together in a room and start talking about this and focus on solutions and not get in their own corners, she said. The problems we have today are not 1 year in the making. This is the result of decades of bad decisions in the state, and there's plenty of blame to go around. Trying to close the hole with income taxes alone would require an increase from the current 3.75% personal rate to 7% or 8%, Munger said. I don't know any legislator who would vote for a 7 to 8% tax increase, and I don't know how many businesses would stay here, she said. And this is a local Decatur story. Local Decatur going red to highlight health disease. To highlight heart disease. The carpet might not be red, but nearly everything else will be at several places in Decatur today that are participating in National Wear Red Day. Heart disease is the number one killer of women, and along with stroke, cause one in three deaths in women each year. But according to the American Heart Association, 80% of cardiac and stroke events can be prevented with education and action. To spread awareness and education, and also to raise money for research, the AHA, American Heart Association, is encouraging people to wear red and donate to Go Red for Women. HSHS St. Mary's Hospital has participated for several years. It will be holding an event in its lobby from 8 a.m. until noon today. It will be hard to miss. There will be red balloons and everyone will be wearing red. We'll be passing out information for the National Go Red for Women campaign and for Prairie Heart Institute, St. Mary's Chief Nursing Officer Michelle Oliver said. We're encouraging all of our colleagues to wear red to encourage heart health and donate to the cause. Red will be the primary color at all branches of Hickory Point Bank on Friday, too. Brochures and other materials will be available for customers who are interested. All employees who give a $5 donation to the American Heart Association can dress down and wear red, said Carla Miller, Hickory Point Director of Marketing. We love to be a part of community activities, and this has proved to be a fun way to get involved. It's hard to find things this time of year because of the weather. This allows us to participate and still be at our workstations, so it's a good fit. Other places Decatur participating in National Wear Red Day are Richland Community College, Union Iron, the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel, and the Decatur Family YMCA. This is the 13th year for National Wear Red Day, and is always on the first Friday of the month. In addition to wearing red and donating, the AHA encourages women to schedule a wellness visit, a scheduled prevention checkup to review a woman's overall health so her doctor can measure blood pressure, check cholesterol, and look for signs of heart disease, stroke, and other illnesses. The visit can be scheduled with any primary care physician, nurse practitioner, or an OBGYN. Heart disease in women. According to St. Mary's Chief Nursing Officer Michelle Oliver, an estimated 43 million are affected by heart disease, and 90% of women have one or more heart risks. Risk factors: high cholesterol, high blood pressure, diabetes, limited physical activity, obesity, age, family history. Prevention: being active daily, 30 minutes or more of moderate physical exercise, controlling cholesterol by eating fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and fish, managing blood pressure, limiting alcohol consumption, quitting smoking, and limiting secondhand smoke, reducing blood sugar, losing weight. A story from the Decatur Park District. The Decatur Park District received a relatively low interest rate on its most recent bond sales, though market factors drove the rate slightly higher than previous years. The district's board voted Wednesday to sell $4.4 million in general obligation bonds to the lower of two bidders, Jeffries & Company of New York. Money will be used to fund the district's capital priorities, including equipment replacement and maintenance, such as replacement of the Fairview Park Pavilion roof. The roughly 11% interest rate means that the district will pay $39,788 in interest for the one-year bond, after taking into account a premium paid by the bidder, Chief Financial Officer Rodney Burr said. It's higher than the 0.64% interest rate the district received on general obligation bonds last year, Burr said, but it's still a good rate. Dan Forbes of Spear Financial Inc., which worked with the district on the bidding process, told the board there were several factors that might attract. And this ends the first portion of the Decatur Herald and Review for February 5th.